if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 406. This is our 2026 Open Championship in-depth research podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss the final major of the 2026 season at Royal Birkdale Golf Club. Good morning, chaps.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website, where we have our Open Championship research preview, detailed Open Championship form, combi sheet and major championship form stats, plus from Monday the 13th of July, our Open Championship predictor models. All of our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall or registration required. We're available on X. You can follow us. Barry is at A Good Top Golf. Paul is at Golf Betty. I am at Bamford Golf. We're on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available each and every week. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts plus YouTube. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I'll read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name where you are in the review. Now, this is a YouTube review. It's from Jordan Gregory, and Jordan is in the United States. Jordan, thank you very much for your time. Walmart Shane Lowry, Harry Kane, and a young Alfred the Butler from Batman guide you through the winding roads and dark alleys of golf betting using a mix of humour, statistics and general good cheer. I love listening to these cheeky lads week in and week out. Bosh! Jordan, thank you for your review.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers, Jordan. So have we got to try and work out who's who out of that then?
Well, I think I can work out who Barry is. Walmart Shane Lowry.
Oh, dear.
Harry Kane.
Oh, you've had Michael Kane before, Steve.
I've been called Michael, yes. I've been called worse. Yeah, young Alfred the Butler. I don't know. Is that you, Paul?
I would imagine so, yeah.
You're not young, that's for sure.
No.
You are younger than Alfred the Butler was, though, in Batman. I want to get out there very, very quickly. Our Open Championship Tips podcast is just around the corner. It will be available from Tuesday the 14th of July. That's when, Paul, you are going to tell the world who's winning the Open Championship, correct?
Well, with any luck, yes. Well, the preview will actually be out the day before the pod. So, yeah, from Monday... We'll have some thoughts on who we think, or I think, is going to win it, and then we'll chat it all through and see what you guys think on Tuesday as well. So tune in, yes.
I always like this particular research preview because I don't have to say a lot, because Paul is in the hot seat for the Open Championship. My job, my responsibility, will be finding some longer shots to have a bet on. And, you know, clearly have a couple of bets myself on who I fancy for the Open. Now, I'm sure to be placing plenty of my Open Championship bets with Bet365. If you are 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their Bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion. Plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Visit golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365. That's golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365 for £30 of free bets with Bet365. Now, Muirfield, or Birkdale, let's get it right. Birkdale Golf Club. You're going to get so annoyed, listeners, across the next, I don't know, 10 days of people telling you that it's the fairest test on the Open Championship rota.
Mm.
Apparently it's the fairest test on the Open Championship rota, guys. Do you know?
So, it seems to be a regular occurrence, doesn't it, in terms of the sound bites that come out from the players who've been here before.
Did you know that, Barry? It's the fair test, mate.
I mean, do we just give it to Scotty Scheffler because it'll merge with his brain? This thing about fairness is, I'm getting bored with hearing it about everything to do with a golf tournament and professional golf. Like, golf can be extremely unfair, as pretty much everybody knows, and you do get bad bounces and bad breaks, and you just have to suck them up and get on with it. So, if you're playing really well, you'll overcome those bad breaks that everybody gets throughout a tournament and hopefully be in a position to win come the end. But yeah, it's a bit of a tiresome soundbite. Kind of, let's move on from it to something else, please.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that. Jordan Spieth, 2017, and I quote you, "I like the golf course. It's very cool. It's a very tough but fair test." The runner-up, Matt Kuchar, 2017. "It seems so playable, so fair, well-designed, and with different staggering of bunkers on the fairways, you feel like if you hit it down the fairway, it's going to stay in the fairway," which is a valuable point, actually.
Do you think then, or the noises that are made, is more an attack on some of the other courses on the open road, so that you can get caught out, you can have, you know, what would be described as an unfair situation, as you know, as Barry says, bad bounces or bad lies, and actually, because you get less of that here, it's kind of, you know, that's how the courses should be, and some of the other tracks are therefore unfair rather than this being fair. I don't know. Anyway, it's all semantics at the end of the day, isn't it?
If every course was the same, golf would be unbelievably boring. So yeah, I love that there's variety. I love that when you're on links, in particular, you do get these really gnarly and funky bounces, and you feel like you've just, the golfing gods are just not looking down on you to an extreme extent. It sucks when it happens, but like, you, it's part of the challenge of golf for me, and when it's links golf in particular, is just being able to mentally handle those breaks and maybe and use it in the right way to galvanize you going forward after that bad break. So I think that's a great aspect of the Open when it is playing in slightly tougher conditions, let's say not like benign conditions, which we've had a couple of, and you will get those, but bring on the variety. I love it. This looks like it should be a really exciting tournament, and I think we'll get into it a bit more, but I think it will be an accessible potential victory for a wide variety of styles of players.
Yeah, can see that. Because, yeah, a lot of it's going to come down to the conditions, as it often does with the Open Championship. And one thing you can say about the R&A is they don't tend to muck about with the setups of the Opens. If the course is going to play easy because it's soft and when windless, then the winning score reflects that. If it's tough and it's windy, it's bouncy, it's firm, whatever, and it plays difficult as a result, then you know, and so be it. The winning score will be level par or thereabouts. So, yes, I think you've got to applaud it in that respect. For me, particularly with some of the more recent majors, there's been a little too much intervention, and just to try and, almost to your point, Barry, you end up with this kind of homogenous course that shows little variety. So, yeah, very much looking forward to next week.
This is interesting from Graham Dow in 2008. Doesn't contain the word fair. I have to say, this is up there probably in my top five favourite links courses around. I've been really, really impressed by it. It kind of reminds me a lot of some of the really good Irish links like Waterville or kind of Anis Grove, or even, and this is the bit I find really interesting, even Port Rush. So it's got the real rolling dunes, the real classic links feel to it. It's not tricked up. It's just a solid, tough test. I'm not going to say the word fair, which is after test, in the quote. Oh, sorry. But that link to Port Rush is something I've just taken away. There might be something in that in terms of form links or whatever. But let me take you through the course and the course knowledge that we've got. So Royal Birkdale Golf Club, Southport, Merseyside. You know, chaps, that's where Tommy Fleetwood grew up. It's another fact you're going to get very bored with over the next 7 days.
Oh, that's just shaved another 2 points off his price.
Designer, Frederick G. Hawtrey plus J.H. Taylor with a Martin Hawtrey. 1993 plus Mackenzie and Ibea 2023-2025 renovation. That's right, they've renovated the course since we were here last when Jordan Spieth won in 2017. Coastal links, medium length, it's a par 70, around about 7,223 yards. Might change, we'll see when they firm up the scorecard in tournament week. Number of holes with water in play, just the one. Has Finau got in this? I don't know. He might have a chance. Number of sand bunkers, 110. Acres of fairway, 29. And here comes the agronomy bit for agronomy lovers like me. Fairways, fescue with brown top bent grass. The rough is fine fescue with buckthorn, dwarf willow. It's a rare one. Mm. They've even quoted where the rough, and I know this is something Barry wants to talk around, they've even quoted the rough lengths. So the semi is going to be at 1.4 inches. And then the primary is going to be 2.75 to 3 inches. And then if you get even further out, some of it looks like it's kind of knee high.
Yeah. It feels like a good setup, right? Sorry. Just for the rough, just to interject quickly, it feels like a good setup the way that it looks on videos so far. It's kind of graduated, like a few yards of the semi, then a few yards of the primary, and then you're into the, oh God, please be lucky when you're
agreed
a bit further off. So yeah, the penalty for the miss gets, you know, exponentially worse as the further away from the target you get. So very fair setup, yeah.
We've seen in US Opens where the further you miss the fairway, the better. This would appear to be the converse of that, where the further you miss the fairway, the worse the penalty. Of course, I suppose if you're hitting it and you're going the other side of the rope where it's all getting trampled down, you know, but people don't aim for these misses, do they? But it's in the luck of the gods. But yes, they're setting it up. The R&A are going to set it up to try and penalise the more flagrant off the tee.
Yeah.
So you have to. It's a lack of sleep due to our 39 degree temperatures that I think I'm all a bit befuddled as I'm recording this. The greens themselves, 6,000 square feet on average, featuring A1 and A4, creeping bent grass. Fine fescue and poana mix. They're all over the place, the greens.
Yeah, it's often what you get, isn't it, on these linksy courses. They're just allowed to be what they are, and they'll get a mix of the indigenous grasses, and doesn't stop them being firm and fast and, you know, and play pretty smooth. What they are.
The 2026 course with this new Mackenzie and Ibea renovation, which took place over 2023 and 2025, it's been extended out to circa 7,200 yards, par 70. So that's about 70 yards longer than 2017. In reality, it's a medium length test, which features a 34 out, 36 back split, where the players first look at a par 5 is the 14th hole. That's going to frustrate many.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good mental test, isn't it?
Mm.
Like, see, can you hang on to keep yourself in a spot and then accelerate if possible? Or it's the or if you're really struggling, it could be a chance of redeeming your round. It's going to be fascinating.
And they won't be playing off 10 at the Open Championship. So for everybody, the 14th hole is the first par 5. The new design unveiled in 2026 sees a brand new risk and reward par 4. That's the fifth hole. A redesigned seventh hole with an elevated green. Changes to the closing stretch include the remodelled par 5 14th, which was previously the 15th. The 15th is now a new 200-yard par 3. Whilst there has also been adjustments to the par 4 16th and closing 18th holes. Other changes for the 26 Open see the bunker count reduced to approximately 110. The renovation removed a number of smaller, reveted pot bunkers and reshaped the remaining hazards to create larger, more strategic bunker complexes. It still makes Birkdale one of the most heavily bunkered of all Open venues. So if you're comparing the 2017 Open course to the 2026 Open course, it's not just a lengthening project. The routing and strategic character of several holes have been materially changed for the first time in decades. I think this quote from Spieth, well, I don't know. I won't even read it. To me, it feels a kind of course where key distances into greens are around about the 175 to 200 mark. If we're going to go down the route of seeing what Jordan Spieth's game looked like in 2017 and Matt Kuchar's to a certain degree, they, when you look at the PGA Tour numbers going into the event, were drivers of the golf ball. And this is true for Spieth. You might not think this is correct, but he was in the top 60 when it came to misses on the fairway. So missed drives and how far they are away from the fairway. This dispersion curve. Both he and Kuchar were well within the top third of that PGA Tour number. But you just look at their games. I mean, what are Spieth and Kuchar there? I mean, they're not. Spieth wasn't overly long at that point. But what he was fantastic with his irons, a great scrambler and a fantastic putter. And I think with potentially coarse conditions we see this year, which unless there is some form of divine intervention would suggest that we're going to see some very firm and fast fairways and deep rough, they'll keep the greens, I would have thought, pretty receptive, but I think that's going to play into the hands of all manner of different kind of game shapes, but short sorts that hit fairways and have got amazing short games, they must be licking their chops, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, I think there's going to be a variety of ways to get round it. I don't think it's going to be... I mean, we can talk about the condition of the course and what we've gleaned in a sec, but I don't think it's going to be quite as baked as, say, Hoylake back in 2006, and that was the year that Tiger went round. And did he actually pull the driver out of the bag all week, or was that the... It may have been once in the entire week, and the rest of it is just about positional play and finding your, or navigating your way round from there. So I think it brings a lot of different people into the mix. As to what the conditions have done to the rough, it remains to be seen, really, because, you know, we've all looked at pictures of the first cut. The first cut generally doesn't look a massive penalty, and then when you're getting into the fescue, it's going to be a bit more iffy. But with a lack of rain up in Merseyside over the last few weeks, and as we've seen, nothing substantial between now and the end of the tournament, then I wonder how thick that's really going to be. I suspect even if you're deep in the fescue, you're going to be able to find your way out of it more often than not. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see what that's... I don't know. I mean, you might have some insight, Barry, from how courses have been playing, your side of the the Irish Sea over the last few weeks and months?
I think when it, when the last links I was playing was in Carn, and that was 5-6 weeks ago now, and wasn't in the kind of dry kind of condition that this will be. But yeah, even when that rough kind of dries out, the grass gets a little bit thinner for the first, second, and let's say the long cuts. Yes, you know, finding your ball is a little bit easier, especially the longer stuff, because the grass isn't as thick. It still has like wiry strength to it though, when you're trying to get out of the longer stuff, and you do get, you still have that unpredictability of how the ball is going to come out of those, even just the first little cut. Like, does it come out with regular spin? Do you get a flyer? Does it knuckle? That's going to be interesting. And I think, seeing how firm they set up the greens, or, you know, how receptive they set up the greens, that will inform an awful lot of the scoring. If the greens are firm, then it'll put an extreme premium on accuracy off the tee, to make sure in the fairway to have that spin control and trajectory control for your approach shots. So just because the rough is dry, I don't think I'd discount it. It'll be a little bit easier yet to get the ball up in and around the green, but the element of control is still going to be an issue. So it's going to be really interesting. I think it's the green setup is the interesting thing. How firm they allow or have them.
Yeah. No, fair comment. I mean, for me, and again, you know, we're kind of guessing a little bit at this stage, but for me, I think finding a bunker off the tee is going to be far more of a penalty than finding the rough. You know, in general, I think you're looking around about a half shot penalty, I guess, on average, if you're finding a bunker off the tee. So those players who can strategically manage the way around that may be in a better spot to begin with. And if the fairways are going to be bouncy and firm, then length off the tee isn't going to be an issue, because players are going to just be playing to their positions and playing to the distances that they want to try and achieve, rather than picking the driver out and smashing it as far as they possibly can each hole.
This is a quote from Jordan Spieth. The further offline you hit it, for the most part out here, the more trouble you're going to be in. And that's tough to do in a major, because you've got so many people coming out that trample down areas that are far off the fairways. But they've somehow done it here, it seems. That off the tee, the closer you are to the fairway, the better chance you have of hitting the green in regulation. And I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you look at his numbers. We haven't got strokes gained, of course, because we were living, even though this was only 2017, we were still living in the dinosaur world of traditional stats. Spieth wasn't straight when he won here in 17. He only hit 43% of fairways. He was 59th of those that made the cut. But you would have presumed then that most of his drives were fairly close to the edge of fairways. Clearly not the one on Sunday, the famous one where it took 45 minutes. Anyway, we won't go down that rabbit hole. He hit 69.4% of greens in regulation, which was third in the field.
Yeah.
So that says to me, and this goes in with your assumption, Paul, that you've got to be strategic here. You've got to know where to miss, and whatever you do, don't get involved in these pot bunkers on fairways or around greens, because you're in a whole world of hurt.
Yeah.
It's a positional golf course.
Yeah. No, I absolutely. I think that's got to be the way forward. And going back to that hole in 2017, that ultimately, was it the 13th? I think it was. I think ultimately that was what spearheaded, you know, spurred Spieth on to finish the way he did, because he managed to scramble his way to a bogey on that hole. And then from there, he didn't look back. He was holing absolutely everything, and it was just a birdie and eagle barrage from that point to take the title from Kuchar, which there. That was the best chance Kuchar has had and ever was likely to have, I guess, of winning a major championship. But if you look at I was just looking at the raw numbers with this, and you know, the winning scores, and Spieth 12 under in a year where the course itself played nearly 2 over par on average for the entire field. That made it the third toughest course on the rota. So even though there were more birdies to come by last time they played here, it still wasn't you know, anything approaching easy. And that was in some relatively soft conditions. That was the year that Brandon Grace shot 62 on the Saturday, wasn't it? So there was some scores to be made out there. The wind wasn't massively impactful, particularly on the Saturday when it was, you know, scoreable. If you go back to Harrington's win before that, 3 over par. Now, you know, firmer, there was some wind in play there. I wonder if we're going to get somewhere kind of in the middle of those two, I guess. Would kind of be my guess. But yeah, it's going to be a challenge whichever way you look at it from a scoring perspective.
So it's early doors to record this, but I'm not seeing a great deal of wind on Thursday or Friday, according to Windfinder. It's gusting 20 miles an hour, tournament Monday, tournament Tuesday, tournament Wednesday. But Windfinder saying it's going to lie down for the opening two rounds.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that goes.
You know, you're always going to have the kind of nuances of a coastal test where you're going to have some, you know, windier elements to the 4 days. But yeah, it doesn't look to be anything out of the ordinary in that forecast. I think the main point to pick up with that, with the weather in general, is that it's been warm, dry up in that part of the world, and over the next week between now, recording on Thursday, and next Thursday, the start of the tournament, there appears to be absolutely no rain in the forecast. Wall to wall sunshine, temperatures up to kind of the low 80s Fahrenheit. It's gonna just bake those fairways, which in terms of making it a proper linksy test is, if that, for the purist, that's exactly what we want. I think we want to see baked out brown looking fairways, I guess, and a real challenge for the players in that respect.
Agreed. I think the only water that's going to find its way onto that course, and we can say this with almost total confidence, between the start of the tournament and us recording this, is literally what the greenkeeping team are going to put on that golf course.
Yeah. It may break down a little bit over the weekend, if the long range forecast is to be believed. But you know, we're 10 days away from that at this point, so I'm not sure we should put too much credence on it. And regardless, it'd have to take a monumental amount of water for that to impact it from now. Yeah. I think.
So. I can feel Barry licking his chops over in Ireland right now.
The setup is phenomenal. And we're not professional agronomists, but from a fan's perspective, this feels like the ideal run-in of weather conditions to a firm testy open. Throw in a one to two club wind, varying, changing directions. It's, you can't really ask for much more, can you?
No. Yeah, I think there's always a lot you can dig into with the Open Championship, and some of the stuff we're not going to be able to formulate completely until the end of the Scottish Open, because there are elements that will wash through, I guess, in what's happening up at the Renaissance Club right now. But there's lots of different things we can look at. You touched on Spieth's performance back in 2017, and ultimately he was finding enough greens from missed fairways to win, and then putted and scrambled his way around. If you look back at Harrington, he hit 51.8% of fairway, so just over half. 52.8% of greens in regulation. So again, he missed nearly half of his greens during the course of the week. Managed to scramble around about 50% of the time, which was 13th for scrambling in the field, and then his putting average was 4th in the field. So he managed to navigate round in what was clearly a more challenging year back in 2008 than 2017, with that kind of magical combination of Harrington's short game, as you'd kind of expect. But then the point with that, I guess, is that Harrington's a past master at mastering links golf, and as we've seen countless times over the years, and that kind of setup, that kind of challenge would have suited him perfectly back then, I'm sure. It does lead on to a point about open experience, and I think this is an important point, because it's very difficult for players to walk in and win an Open Championship, certainly on their first start, and certainly when they're relatively inexperienced in terms of their links golf generally, and also Open Championship records. If you look at the last three winners, Scotty had 4 starts at the Open, Xander had 6, Brian Harman, and this might surprise, had 7 previous starts at the Open Championship before winning. And if you go back through the last 11 winners, they had on average 6 Open Championship starts. The last 5 winners, and I think you mentioned this on one of the previous or recent pods, Steve, it's just over an average
4.2.
Yeah, so I think, and logically that all makes sense, doesn't it? Having that kind of experience of the conditions and also the challenges that the Open Championship can throw up and to you on any given week, and how to handle those, the adversities, I guess, or the unfairness in some respects.
Colin Morikawa won at Sandwich on his first Open Championship appearance, but he was already a major champion.
Yes.
So, but in general, if we'd have been talking about this 5-6 years ago, that 4.2 number though would have been far higher. What we're seeing now with more recent winners is, yes, there's still appearances open, 4 for Scotty, 6 for Xander, 7 for Harman, 7 for Shane Lowry. But then you go back to older champions, Francesco Molinari, now a new member of my Post-it note of doom, and I see he's popped up instantly at the Scottish Open.
I noticed that this morning.
11 Open appearances. Henrik Stenson, 11. Zach Johnson, 11. So, yeah. It seems to me that you don't need to be of a vintage kind of character now in terms of being able to win an Open, but you want at least... You need some experience of the Open, unless it's an exceptional anomaly.
Yes. No, I agree. It's something that needs to be considered. There are some elements that enable you to chop the field down. And I worked through this yesterday, and I'll caveat this before I start, that I have literally no power in the house at the moment. So everything that I've got here, I've scribbled on a piece of paper yesterday. So if you can hear paper rustling in the background, I do apologise. If I get any of the facts, it feels like I've had my arm chopped off, not actually having a computer sitting in front of me right now.
People are amazed that you're actually recording a podcast with no physical electricity in the property.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's hope the mobile signal stays strong enough for the remainder. Anyway, as of yesterday, we had 153 players in the field. And you can chop that down to 86 if you pick one of the most solid statistics that has been running for a number of years now. Now, if you look back all the way to the start of this century, 18 of the 25 winners so far in the 2000s had a win in that calendar year. Scottie Scheffler, for instance, had 3 wins last year, including the US PGA Championship prior to winning. Brian Harman's an exception to that. He had finished 2nd at the Travelers the month before, so that was his best finish. Prior to that, the next player who didn't have a season win was Zach Johnson, who in 2015, the best that he'd had was third. That was the week before, actually, the John Deere Classic. So if you go to the extreme of Zach Johnson and say, OK, I want everyone who hasn't finished inside the top three in an event of some description this calendar year out of the shortlist, then you get down to a field of 86 from 153. So that's an easy way to take a knife to it. You do lose some big players here. And the one right at the top of the list that you lose is Southport's finest, Tommy Fleetwood. So unless Tommy does something this week at the Scottish Open, then he doesn't fulfil that criteria. Justin Thomas goes, Harris English. He was runner-up last year, wasn't he, Harris? Mm-hmm. So he'll be out on that basis. Adam Scott, Keith Mitchell, Kashmir Keith, Steve, or Barry. That's one you'll have to scrub off your list. Jake Knapp, Patrick Cantlay. I don't think Cantlay was going to be on any of our lists anyway. Brooks Koepka, best of ninth so far this year, despite showing some improvements as well. Jordan Spieth, the 2017 champion, disappears from that list as well. So you can easily get to a slightly more manageable list from that. Now, second point, if you go back to 2012, each winner had a top 25 finish in one of the previous four majors. So everyone back to 2012. So again, that's a really solid statistic. So top 25 in one of the previous four majors to get through the next qualification stage. And if you apply that, it takes you down to a list of 39 players. So we're quickly getting down to a more bite-sized level here. We lose the likes of Shane Lowry, Siwoo Kim, Sepp Straka, Matt Wallace, Eric Cole. So down to 39 players off the back of that statistic. Bear with me while I find an appropriate piece of paper with my next set of notes on it. Open Championship form as well. And this kind of alludes to what we were talking about right at the start of this little segment. But 12 of the last 15 Open Championship winners had a top 10 finish at the Open Championship as well. Now, I know in more recent years, there's been a few exceptions to that. But in general, 12 of 15 had a top 10. Scotty had finished 7th the year before. At the Open, Brian Harman had finished 6th the year before at the Open. So there were some recent examples. Cam Smith kind of flies in the face of that, although he had there were a couple of instances where he was in really good positions after 36 or 54 holes. So
I think he had a top 20.
Yeah.
At an Open.
Yeah, and I think he was 5th after halfway, wasn't he, in 2019, yeah. And in the mix in 2021 as well. So it was just the final days that weren't quite working for Cam Smith. So you could have kind of flexed your numbers a little bit to allow him in. Colin Morikawa, that was the COVID year. I think, you know, there were all sorts of ups and downs in that year. So we can kind of expunge that one almost from our statistics. And then prior to that, it was Louis Oosthuizen who just walked away with the title. Massive break with the draw that year, and you do get that occasionally at the Open Championships, don't you? So I think there's almost an asterisk against that one as well. So for me, top 10 at a previous Open is a pretty good metric to look at as well. And if you remove everyone left out of our list who hasn't got a top 10 at the Open, you're down to a list of 22, or down to a short list of 22. You lose the likes of Gary Woodland, Nikolai Højgaard, Alex Fitzpatrick, Aaron Rye, PGA champion, Minwoo Lee, going well on the Scottish when I last looked. Ludvig Åberg is another drop off the list at that point as well. JJ Spawn, JT Poston, Joaquin Niemann as well would fall off that, fall off the list at that stage there. So getting down to a manageable point, 22, we can take it down to 17 if we remove everyone who isn't currently in the world ranking top 40. Now, I know you could scream at me, what about the LIV players? There are actually no LIV players that we would take out at this point, so I'm happy to go with that. Every winner since 2012 has been in the top 40 of the world rankings when they've won. Darren Clark in 2011 was the exception to that prior. And then prior to that, it was 2003, Ben Curtis. Everyone else actually back to 2000 has been in the top 55. But since 2012, top 40. So you can get down to a list of 17 players if you lose the likes of Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, Tom Kim, notwithstanding what he will do at the Scottish this week, Max Homer, Padraig Harrington, who popped up again with another senior major last week, had made it down to the final 22, but of course he's doesn't accrue to ranking points nowadays. And yeah, as much as it would be a fantastic Open Championship to see Padraig contending, you know, has he still got it in him? Well, we will see. We'll find out next week, of course. So on that basis, if all of those trends were to continue, then we've got a shortlist of 17. And the winner would come from one of those. I'll rattle through them quickly and see if there's any names that catch your eye or catch your ear, as it may be. Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Cam Young, Matt Fitzpatrick, Russell Henley, Colin Morikawa, Chris Gotterup, Wyndham Clark, Justin Rose, John Rahm, Victor Hovland, Xander Schauffele, Bob McIntyre, Tyrrell Hatton, Hideki, Patrick Reed, and Bryson DeChambeau are the players, the final 17 who tick those boxes. Now, the other thing to say with that is the Scottish Open is happening at the moment. Previous or recent winners have tended to finish top 15 at the Scottish Open. So not only have they been playing the Scottish Open, but they've also been performing reasonably well. Scotty Scheffler last year came across, played the Scottish Open and finished eighth. So, and the three winners prior to that had also had some decent enough finishes. So we need to overlay that on top of the results, on top of that final 17, and that will give us a view on Monday as to statistically, trend-wise, who might win. Now, of course, trends are there to be broken and something completely different can and probably will happen, but I think it's always interesting to try and get a little bit of a view historically how that might manifest. Any names in that list that had previously caught either of your imagination?
Barry?
I mean, I'm interested a little bit in Victor. Like, just the win last week, saying that he feels like he's found it. Maybe, you know, this is part of a few weeks of very settled mind in terms of where his comfort is with his game. You know, if he's on it, and this would, like, look at, I think there was, scrambling thing was very interesting from looking at the Harrington year. Paul, you're saying Harrington was just under 50% for scrambling, and he was 13th, which, and then Spieth was 72% scrambling, which put him fourth. So that shows you the differences in how the courses, the course played in those two kind of editions. I would say that the Harrington year is a lot more analogous to what we look like we're going to have this time round. So it scrambling looks, you know, should be difficult for a lot of the field. Now, maybe there'll be less wind than what there was when Harrington was there, but, you know, maybe that equalizes or neutralizes Victor's kind of weakness a little bit.
There is another point with Victor, and this is if you look at Spieth's record prior to winning here in 2017. He'd won the Travelers on his last start. That was his previous win. So if you're looking for performance there and in any way having some correlation with this year, then that could be a tick in that box as well. For reference, the other event that Spieth had won prior to winning 2017 was Pebble Beach. And there does appear to be a fair bit of correlation between Pebble Beach and performances here at Birkdale. Five of the previous winners had also won at Pebble Beach at some point in their career. And that includes Spieth, of course. So there is a little bit of correlation there, I think. If you look at the Pebble winners, Morikawa was the winner this year. And then more recent winners, McIlroy, Wyndham Clark, Justin Rose, Tom Hoagie, Daniel Berger, Nick Taylor. So certainly Morikawa and McIlroy, Clark are likely to be interesting names for this coming week. Justin Rose as well. I'm sure there'll be some love for Justin Rose over the course of the next few days as people put their cards together.
If you had to pick one now between Scotty and Rory for next week, who are you going with?
Me personally, Rory. I wonder we keep talking about the same thing with Rory, and it's about what now floats his boat, what gets him interested, what gets him excited. And we've seen him in terms of his preparation out at Birkdale, just walking the course, getting a feel of it all, getting his head around it again, understanding what the changes have been since he last played it, and how that differs from 2017 in terms of the setup. Winning for him the Masters and the Open Championship in the same year would be a
banner
target.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that Scotty has been at his imperious best in 2026. It's a fact. He hasn't been as good as he has been historically. He's, in terms of his world ranking, he's still number one, of course, but his ranking points are starting to drift down a bit. The gap between him and Rory and the rest of the golfing elite is narrowing, and I think that is evident from some of the performances. We've seen him quite angry at times.
Saw a breakdown of his strokes gained numbers last year versus this year, and the glare, like, he's only 0.2 behind his pace overall, but the glaring thing for me was he's half a shot worse on his approach shots than this year than he was last year. So he's still plus 0.9 to the average golfer, but that's, you know, that adds up to two shots over a tournament, and that's what, you know, that's kind of the margin he's missed a few wins by. So yeah. I'd be leaning more towards Rory as well. I mean, his Open record since 2014 is nuts. He has 7 top sevens, including that win in 2014. 2 missed cuts and 146th. That's out of playing. Yeah, he missed a year because of the was the ankle injury from playing football with his mates in 2015.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
But I just think Rory's shown time and again how good he is on links and firm courses. That really feels like a very good match for him, an opportunity.
Yeah, look, if it's firm and windy, I'm a little bit more concerned. Firm and relatively calm, less so. And I think that enables him to take on some of the more aggressive shots around here. We talked about the changes to the fifth. That's the kind of hole that he's just going to take a shy at every single day. And he's got the game to get there every single day if he hits the right drive. Mm. And it'd be interesting if I think the putter's got to hold up for Rory to truly not just contend, but to go forward and win the tournament. And he's definitely on my shortest of shortlists this coming week. And I'd be fascinated to see how he goes at the Scottish, because he talked about, did you see when he was talking to Faldo at Birkdale? And they were just chatting on the fairways, and he was talking about how coming to the Scottish Open would be an exercise of just kind of getting a scorecard in his pocket and walking around, you know, a course with some fellow pros and being back in that kind of fold rather than going all out to win the golf tournament. Was, you know, it was a rust shaking exercise. But should he, you know, by the very fact of going out there and playing, show some real signs of, the game being very close to his A game, then, yeah.
Currently,
a tough one to shift.
Currently 300 through 15, 2 off the lead. So it's a lovely first day. He'll be happy if he gets in like that and just keeps tipping along this week like that.
Yeah, and, you know, as we've seen from the most recent years, top 10, top 12, top 15 at the Scottish, just shake that rust off, get yourself into the right kind of mindset, playing the right kind of shots, and then move it forward the following week. That is the perfect preparation, I think.
Yeah. I'd take Rory over Scotty. I can't disagree. I love Hovland, by the way. I mean, red hot form into a major is always a good look, and that certainly works with the Open. Even Brian Harman was on a really strong run entering at triple digit numbers.
Yeah, he'd finished third, and then it popped up, hadn't he, at the Scottish Open, and I think he was third going into the weekend, third into Sunday, wasn't he, and then finished 12th. So again, yeah, another one of these players that fits that point about finishing top 15 or thereabouts the previous week in Scotland and moving forward from there.
So you've got Hovland finishing third in Canada, missed the cut at the US Open, then of course won the Travelers. And then you look at him, he's had 5 Open Championship starts. Tick. 12th, 4th at St Andrews, 13th, then missed cut 63. But his game was undoubtedly back at the Travelers, and you know what was back? It was his driving. We always said Victor's strength was straight driving and not monstrous length, but enough length that you combine that with straight driving. It was gaining lots of strokes off the tee, and all of a sudden it came back and he said, oh, I haven't missed a fairway. I think he hit 82% of fairways or something crazy. Mm. So I think Victor has got some wheels under him for this week. We don't know what's going to happen at the Scottish Open, but one thing I have pulled up here is just looking at our predictor raw data. I thought this would be interesting for listeners. Who are the best players over the last 5 years on what we classify as firm golf course conditions? 1, Scotty Scheffler. 2, tied, Tommy Fleetwood, Rory McIlroy. 4, Xander. 5, McNealy. This might surprise a few. 6, Hovland. 7, Burns. It's another one I've got my eye on. 8, Fitzpatrick, tied with Russell Henley. 10, Colin Morikawa. Some interesting names in there. Just below the cut, in 11th, is our Justin Rose at 11. Tied with JT. Don't fancy JT for the Open Championship, personally, at Birkdale.
Yeah, he may be taking the Jordan Spieth line on a few of his holes from... next week, we'll see.
I'll tell you what else I was going to throw in there. You pulled together some fantastic stats. You supplied Barry and I with them yesterday before your electricity outage. Best performing players in majors since the start of 2024. That being the Masters. So that's 11 in all if you're a player of the ilk that can play in all majors. Here's the top 10. Scheffler at 1, 69.5 average score. Xander at 2, 69.73. Then a huge jump. McIlroy 3, 70.36. Rose 70.56. Bryson 70.62. I can only see that number getting bigger after the Open. Then we're going 6 to 10. Chris Gotterup, 70.73. Don't forget, won the Scottish Open last year, finished 4th at the Open at Portrush, coming off a John Deere Classic win and 3 others. Sorry, 2 others this year, so 3 in total. Alex Norren, 70.79. Colin Morikawa and Ludvig Åberg tied at 70.86. And I guarantee you that you two could not guess the 10th place, best placed in majors. And I'm classifying that off the back of they've had to do a minimum of 6 major performances out of 11. You won't get it, but have a go. One guess each.
Paul, it's over shocked. To you because I have the sheet open in front of me, so I'm not
going
to
change. Oh, no.
Well, Paul pulled the sheet together. Yeah, he should know.
Yeah, as I say, I'm completely flummoxed there.
He's got heat stroke.
Yeah. Like, one of the names that was up there, and I don't think he's played enough to qualify for your criteria, one of the names that was up there was Hao Tong Lee.
Yeah.
But I don't think...
Only played 3.
Yeah, I don't think he'll have played enough.
He was fourth at the Open last year, mind.
Yeah, and has some Lynxy experience and Lynxy wins, isn't it? Not wins, but contending performances over the years.
Playing a damn sight better last year than this, though.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment.
You can throw Jesper Svensson in there as well, but he's only had three as well. But he's at 70.90. That isn't the name, though.
What, are we talking American or European? Or
he's one of your favourite golfers.
Oh, go and help me out, Steve, before I flounder anymore.
Matt Wallace. 70.96 from six appearances since the Masters in 2024, which he didn't play in. Mm. He's had a 43rd, a 41st, a 17th, a 23rd, a 45th and a 44th in majors. So he's never missed the cut in a major that he's played since the start of 2024.
So, yeah, so hyper-consistent. So yeah, maybe a cut maker then, that might, if you can find a market for Matt for next week, that could be a one, couldn't it?
Beneath them, Billy Horschel, Maverick McNealy. He does fit logically, McNealy, you know, putter, scrambler. Patrick Reed, Aaron Rye, Tyrrell Hatton, tied with Russell Henley. And then you're out to John Rahm. I mean, John Rahm's a long way down there.
Yeah, it's not really been going for him, is it, the majors in recent times?
No. There's a name there also around the Rahm. He's never going to win, but he does tick a lot of boxes in terms of decent majors. You'd literally get him at 12 places each way. That is Corey Connors. Mm. Ain't going to win, but with President's Cup qualification, and he was top 10 at the Travelers last time out. He's clearly warming to the task of knowing he needs to do something and get a top five finish just to make sure that he's for the internationals in that team.
Yeah.
But yes, John Parry's in there as well, 71.14. He's only played four majors, but he's had a missed cut, a 16th, a 70th and an 11th at the US Open.
Mm.
Parry's an interesting name for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Are there any players, Barry? Any players, Barry, that you won't back at the top of the Open betting?
Oh, here we go. Okay, you ready for this, Scotty Scheffler?
Oh yeah, go for it.
Yeah, not backing Scotty, not backing Tommy, not backing Rahm. He's talking about buying equity in LIV, or at least didn't deny any possibility of it. So I think he's back to distracted zone with LIV. Fitzy's interesting. I don't love backing Fitzy, but I think he's going to have... I can see him right up and around and contending. I won't be backing Xander just because the guy's always 20-1 or 18-1 or whatever. So it kind of, it's like the most statically predictable price on the market ever. And it just seems to be missing that little... for want of a better letter, that little X factor, that little extra spark of fire that seems to be just missing from his game for the last while. We keep I don't know if it's you guys, but I keep thinking like, oh, he's going to pop and it's going to, you know, he's going to finally start Xandering all over the place and just not there. Right, keep going.
You've only got an hour, Barry.
Yeah, no. God, I might be tempted into Ludwig. I'm such a sucker for backing him. But again, that long, it's just the tee to green game is so good that if, you know, that could really tempt me in. Rose will just have that. I won't be backing Rose, but I think that'll be that interesting story of the week with the return to Birkdale and yada, yada, yada. So does he go on one of those emotional runs and get really close? Does he get his heart broken again? It'll remain to be seen. I don't like Morikawa, so I won't be backing him. Cam Young's off the boil. Victor, while we've been talking, I've just put a chunky bet on him on the exchange. Tyrrell looks a little bit off the boil this week. But if good Tyrrell shows up next week, that's the kind of setup he can go well on. Yeah. D- don't like Wyndham Clark, so won't be backing him.
Just generally?
Just in general, yeah. I just wouldn't want to go for beers with him. That's my kind of criteria. So, and I just don't think you're winning. He's winning two majors in a year. That would just be, God, too much.
Burns. No, that's a very valid point. The last player, of course, to go back-to-back majors, Jordan Spieth. Do you see Wyndham Clark doing that?
Yeah, and Scotty's defending champion. He's done that before, but yeah, that's just to loop that connection in. Sam Burns, interesting. He's got a case like the Justin Rose's about him, like major heartbreak. So here's another chance for Sam.
In that top 10 of firm golf course players.
Yeah. Keep going. Got her up after backing him for the US Open, completely disappointed us, and then went and popped for a win last week. So that was a bummer to see that happen. So I don't know. Am I ready to be bitten twice by him? Maybe, maybe not. Won't be backing Bobby Mack. Bryson, I'll probably be backing for the Grand Slam of Missed Cuts in Majors 2025. Henley, yeah, probably did enough to disappoint me to never back him again after thinking I had him clicked for the US Open. No. And Shane. Yeah, always in consideration, I guess, for a major, but we'll see. And yeah, the rest, I don't know. I'll probably be jumping into some longer odds after that.
Going to find a market for that Stuart Green, is it? Is that how you pronounce it?
Make the cut, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Doesn't really excite.
40 market. Yeah. No.
Those kind of bets don't usually. Yeah, those kind of bets don't usually excite me too much.
About Matthew Southgate for your long shots piece, Steve. Qualified again, didn't he? Sixth here in 2017.
Oh, Paul, stop it. You've got to adapt, Paul. You've got to wipe all of these players out of your mind that you constantly tip up over the last 15 years. And sometimes you just got... Next, you'll be telling me David DeVal.
Matt Southgate, he can play links golf.
Yeah.
We've got the last chance qualifier on Monday as well, haven't we? That'll be a fascinating little tournament as well.
Aldridge Potgieter.
Yeah, 12 players into one. Aldrich in the field, yeah, as you say.
I think he's second on the alternates list anyway, so there's a small chance he slips in if he doesn't get the spot on Monday. Excuse my ignorance on this. Is that being televised on Monday?
I haven't seen, actually, if it is.
It's likely to be on the Open Championship website, yeah. Surely. There'll be some kind of live YouTube feed, I'd guess. Mm. Otherwise, why would they bother doing it?
Yeah,
saying that, it is the R&A, so who knows?
Well, that kind of tournament where everyone's just, it's 18 holes. There's no downside. It's all upside, isn't it? You go out there and you attack every pin and try and beat those other 12 players over 18 holes. It should be a fascinating day for those players.
I love your list, Barry. So thanks for that. I'm sure the listeners, that's what people listen to podcasts for. They want opinions. One more question to both of you, and this is from me. Who do you see, and of course we haven't got final odds because we've still got anti-post odds up, who do you see at triple digits that would interest you in a bet next week? I'm basically marking homework and getting you to make the selections for me.
I've just told you Matthew Southgate, Steve.
Next, you'll be telling me Dustin Johnson.
For the love of God.
Don't mention Adam Scott. Never back him at a major.
Triple digits. God, yeah.
I had a crazy idea about Akshay Bhatia.
Not you mad. You
might have to get 100-1 on him, you know.
Not terrible. He was one that was kind of in my head there for a moment. It's links, so again, wouldn't be shocked to see one of the Højgaards poking their head up into the top 10.
Yeah, Nikolai's he's triple digits at the moment. Whether he's still going to be there after the Scottish Open. Yeah. I've got an idea in terms of maybe Akshay, maybe JT Poston, who was top five at the US Open, won Memorial last month. Come on, he can win big tournaments. Hasn't got any Open form, but he's played four times at the Open. So he's got experience.
Paul, here's one going well this week. Gorgeous golf swing. Ángel Ayora, broadly 150 to 1 at the moment, with across the market with six places. But if you can sneak that triple digit, so like a 10 places, 12 places, maybe interesting.
Yeah. It's just flat as the deceiving the DP World Tour, doesn't he? But that win will come at some point soon, and we'll see where he pushes on from there. Whether a firm and fast links is what's going to be suiting him, I'm not entirely sure. We'll see. I haven't got the odds open clearly in front of me, but what price are we looking at for Alex Fitzpatrick? Is he in that kind of bracket? Was he a bit short?
I think he's been relatively 50s. Kneecapped.
50s. Okay. Yeah. 66 is a Boyle's sixth place at the moment, so yeah, that's good.
I don't know what constitutes a long shot. I might actually just make my own rules up and say anyone above 80 to 1, and that brings in a whole list of players that I might actually fancy a bit about. Keegan Bradley, by the way.
Just increase your stake, Steve. That's it. Just balances it out effectively 100 to 1.
You know, what is a long shot? Does it literally have to be triple digits? Will someone shoot me if it's 80 to 1 or 90 to 1? With 10 plays here, I don't know.
I don't think so.
These are the rules that Paul and I just generate and create ourselves.
How's Alex Noren on the old firmed courses? He could, you know, that guy's got pedigree and can show up. He's 125s in a couple of spots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he playing great, though, Alex Noren, at the moment? Miscut 55th have been his last three.
That's a solid bit of lead in form. But he shows up and opens his last out of his last six open appearances, 6th, 17th, 11th, miscut, 23rd, 13th.
Oh yeah, I mean, we went through those top 10 major performers, didn't we? How do you explain it? 11 majors. He's in the top 10.
I reckon we'll end up with a player who finishes top 15, top 20, thereabouts, at the Scottish Open, who still remains a little under the radar that you'll get at triple-digit prices for next week. And they could potentially move and push on with a bit of momentum. And as you say, you can have so many extra places for the Open that 10, 12, you know, the top 10, top 12 could well be paying a full each-way place. So there's a bit of scope there for squeezing someone in.
We are recording this after the Scottish Open has started, and he's sitting there at 2 under par. So he's showing something at the Scottish Open. If that continues, could be an interesting bet, Alex Noren. 6th, 17th, 11th, 23rd, and 13th across 7 Open Championship appearances. Interesting. Anything else before we close down the research podcast?
No, all good. Time to get some electricity back, and then I can do some proper digging over the next few days.
Well, exactly. Best of luck, Paul, with your electricity. That's a different way of ending the podcast. How are you going to run your stats? You know, your stats lab. If you've got no electricity moving forward, you're going to have to come and move in with me.
Yeah, there may well be a plug at the top of the road at the pub, so that may be where I have to pitch up for the weekend.
Okay. So as we said earlier, the podcast will be out next Tuesday. Which is, he says, scanning down his script, what are we looking at? The 14th of July. Paul's tips, my long shots will be out at golfbettingsystem.co.uk on Monday, the 13th of July, as will all of our suite of data and predictor models if Paul gets electricity. Right, thanks for listening to the Open Championship podcast. If you could throw us a 5-star review, that'd be most appreciated. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Throw us a 5-star press the button on Spotify. That'd be fantastic. And we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.